named Sleazy Martinez. I can't hear that name anymore without hearing Sleazy before it.
Hello and welcome to the Down and Front podcast review of the new Zach Galifianakis film, Between Two Ferns, the movie starring Zach Galifianakis and some other famous stars as well. I think he talks to some celebrities. But it's also directed by Scott Aukerman. Before we get to that review, I have two very special people I want to introduce y'all to. This first person, he plays guitar in a band called Uranus. Michael Blewett, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm just doing wonderful. Thank you for asking. Today I've got some good old wine. It's called Underwood.
I bought it because I think that Zach Galifianakis' character on this would find that funny and somehow mess it up. It's a Pinot Noir by the Union Wine Company. First time in a long time that I've had wine on the podcast. Usually it's been beer as of late. And I gotta say, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah. You started the episode without a shirt, but also with a glass of wine. It's a very interesting discordance you've got going on tonight.
It's sexually confusing, if you will.
It's very postmodern fraternalism, I think.
Yes. As for what I've been watching, I finally, after I think about 5 weeks from starting it, finally finished The Boys, the Netflix series. Amazon Prime series. Fantastic. I don't think anything else needs to be said about it that we haven't said in previous episodes. Phenomenal. Can't wait for the second season.
Awesome. If you mind me asking real quick, Michelle, why do you want to show Uranus to the world?
The world needs to see my anus.
It's not the anus we deserve, but it's definitely the anus we're going to get.
That voice is our other guest that we have here. He goes by the name Mocha, Mr. Mocha. Just curious, who in the black community gave you permission to use that name?
Well, the chancellor, of course, Mr. Warren Jackson, gave me the permission. And I have the documents to prove it.
I see. I mean, did you know that Mocha is Esperanto for black?
I feel like, do you just call me a slur? What is it, Esperanto? I feel like that was a slur.
I feel like this is going to get cut for a big old...
I'm not going to argue with what's on the cue cards. They're always right. I mean, it's cue cards versus you here with who's right or wrong. So I just want to just make sure that everybody knows that we don't condone racism here, Mr. Marino, if that's your name.
I prefer 8-ball cards.
8-ball cards?
Yeah, instead of cue cards.
Oh, yes. I mean, those can... they give you an extra kick.
That's a pool joke. Got him.
I was thinking of cocaine. Never mind.
Brian, I feel like you using my last name is going to get me doxxed.
All right. Well, please accept your Christian name. You can cut that if you want. Who knows? Oh, Do you want me to do like a normal...
This whole file is going to be mysteriously lost.
Do you want me to...
No. Keep on going.
All right, cool. So, Mocha, if that's what you want to go by, what have you been sipping on? What are you watching?
Yeah, it is what I want to go by. And as for what I've been sipping on or what I am sipping on right now, I have some sad news for you all. Today is October 1st, and I have foolhardily agreed to a challenge from a friend of mine, who I don't even know if I can call my friend anymore, to partake in Sober October. So I won't be drinking anything alcoholic for this episode or any of the remaining episodes in the month of October, assuming I survive. But so what I'm drinking tonight to kick it off right is an unfiltered ginger ale by a company called Bruce Cost. It has passion fruit and turmeric, and it's pretty chunky. Which I don't know if that's usually what you're going for when it comes to ginger ale, but I don't know. It costs like $350, so it must be good.
Usually when you open ginger ale, if there's chunks in it, usually mean it's past its expiration date.
There was a bit of a crust on the rim, but I just kind of scraped that off. Anyway, as for what I've been watching, which is bizarre because I am the resident Marvel scholar, but I am behind on my Marvel Netflix shows. And because we're approaching the month of November, which is when all those shows are getting the axe on Netflix, I am trying to burn through the ones I haven't seen yet. So
Is that a real thing?
So here's the thing. I was doing actually a lot of research to get to find an exact quote that said they're getting pulled from Netflix. I couldn't find anything directly, but I mean, it makes sense that they would be. Disney's pulling all of its titles back into itself. Netflix owns the shows they made, but they don't own the IPs. And because they're not going to be making any new Marvel content, if anybody starts watching a Marvel Netflix show and then gets to the end, the only place they have to go is Disney Plus. So it's effectively free marketing for their now biggest competitor. So yeah. I would be surprised if they kept them on there available for streaming.
I have a lot of work to do then.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to avoid being in a Blue-It-like situation. So I just finished watching Daredevil season 3. It was awesome. In fact, watching season 3 of Daredevil, I kicked myself for not watching it sooner. And I also thought to myself how, despite how much I like the other shows, the biggest loss for all of us that like Marvel shows from Disney taking its properties back from Netflix is the loss of Daredevil. Charlie Cox is a great Matt Murdock. I love what they did with all the surrounding cast of characters. I love what they do with the villains in the show every season. Bullseye was great. He was really, really cool and really well done, had a really original take. Kingpin was fantastic as always. And yeah, I think that the last episode kind of felt a bit rushed and kind of forced, but the season as a whole was fantastic. And I'm really going to miss that cast of characters, especially Vincent D'Onofrio. I hope they can find a way to pull him back into Marvel somehow. He's just such a good actor.
Man, they should just put him in Spider-Man 3 because just seeing him just show up as like just a businessman named Wilson Fisk would be awesome.
But anyway, that's what I've been binge watching, and that's probably what I'll be watching next week as I start Punisher season 2.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing tonight, guys. And I am your host tonight, the Mouth of South Bryland. What I'm drinking tonight, I actually have beer. How about that? I'm sorry to hear that, Mocha, that you just went non-alcoholic for the rest of the month.
Yeah, non-alcoholic, no drugs, just butt stuff. That's the only sin I'm indulging in this month.
So, usually I'm not a beer drinker, more of a bourbon whiskey guy, but there's been one beer I've tried to seek out just to taste it and see what it's like. And finally, Massachusetts was blessed to get straight from El Segundo Brewing Company. You got Steve Austin's own Broken Skull Pale IPA right here. So I'm going to pop this bad boy open and we're going to take a little taste.
Please chug it all violently.
As you can see, well, Blewett and Mocha can see that I'm actually pouring it into a glass, which I don't know. In some places they would actually call this a crime, but if beer's coming from a can, I think you should pour it into a glass. It's a little bit more refined.
You know, I'm not a fan of beer out of a glass unless it's poured by someone else. That's a weird statement to say, but I had the Broken Skull IPA, and when I was watching the Patriots over the weekend, which Warren's prediction from Ad Astra, which should be out in the next week or three, it doesn't look good right now. But we have this special glass that lights up every time the Patriots score a touchdown.
Is it connected by Bluetooth? Like what?
It goes to an app. It's crazy. So it's through like a Bud Light app. You choose your teams that you want to like have it go off with when your team scores, and then if you're on Bluetooth, the same Bluetooth, like it pushes it over, it lights it up,
and it's connected to Rob Gronkowski's liver.
Yeah,
I think.
Hopefully,
speaking of Bud Light, I went to the Overwatch League Grand Finals this weekend. And apparently Budweiser or Bud Light is a big sponsor for esports, because the Bud Light Knight was going around taking pictures with people, which I thought was pretty cool. But he was mostly taking pictures with children, and giving out his prizes to children. And there was something really dark and like post-capitalist about all these parents lining up to have their kids take a picture with the Bud Light knife.
Yeah, that's fantastic for a bunch of professional esports teams that have mostly 16-year-olds on them and stuff. But I have to say right now, this Broken Skull IPA is definitely a very tasty IPA. It's light, which ain't too bad. I'd definitely call this more of a summertime beer than getting ready for the deep, dark winter of New England. But I'm enjoying this. Stone Cold Steve Austin, I think you've done a good job. So congratulations. But what I've been watching recently is, since I have an ESPN Plus account, I've been diving into watching more and more NFL supplemental videos to keep me tied over till every Sunday when the Pats win all the time. Sorry, Warren. It's just a better team pulled it out at the end. And that's just the truth. But what I've been watching lately is a show called Peyton's Places, which is on ESPN Plus, and it's hosted by Peyton Manning. Since this is the 100th anniversary of the NFL, he did a show where he went around and like talked about the stories of the lesser known but still pretty significant moments in football history, and he either like kind of explores it a bit or just interviews like classic NFL players about their role in whatever that significant moment was. And like it's interesting that like the longest pass that's been thrown by a football player was from the top of a building into Bryant Park in New York. And so Peyton Manning got Chris Carter to actually help him recreate that throw. And the only thing that was different was the building. I forget the name of the building, but it's right across from Bryant Park. When they throw it the first time, there's an extra 30 yards of park to it that was next to the street, which doesn't exist anymore. So Peyton Manning had to actually throw it 30 yards farther than the last the one they did in the 20s. So he's throwing like a 130-yard pass to Chris Carter onto the ground. And it was pretty neat that they actually took the time to try to recreate that. But also he interviews like the Bears super fans and goes into like the history of the whole, like how did the Bears become the Bears? Why are the Bears so storied in their city? And why are they considered one of the best franchises ever? But I think like one of my favorite episodes when he talks to people that have records that will probably not be broken for a long, long time. So like Emmitt Smith with the all-time rushing record, or Eric Dickerson with the single season rushing record, or Brett Favre with the Ironman record for the most consecutive starts in history. So it's a really neat show, especially if you're interested in just like NFL trivia. But it's also really cool that Peyton's a like charismatic enough host and interviewer to bring a lot of the more human connection out of these stories as well. But we will get into our spoiler-filled review of Between Two Ferns, the movie, very soon. But before we head into that, I did want to ask our team tonight, what is your favorite Between Two Ferns episode, if you have one, or why do you like Between Two Ferns so much?
Blewett? So, yeah, I mean, I remember when this came out way back in the day. I love stupid, awkward comedy. I think that's an amazing thing. As far as my favorite episodes, there's a couple parts of the Natalie Portman episode that are phenomenal, and I think the one of the funniest things I've ever seen is Michael Cera getting touched by Zach Galifianakis. He makes this noise when Zach Galifianakis touches his inner thigh. That's like maybe one of my favorite auditory experiences of all time. It's just the most awkward, just, it's perfect. I was peeing myself laughing.
That's great. Mocha?
I think for me, this show is ridiculous. Everything about it from concept to execution is ridiculous, which is why I'm particularly enamored with his interview with Barack Obama, because it's such like a, it's from this era of existence that is just like feels like it's ages away, when like we had a situation where someone like Barack Obama came onto the show understanding fully like that it was just silly and goofy. And I feel like not a lot of politicians would put themselves in that position or even come out of that situation still looking just like smooth and smart and being like funny along with it. And I think that's a really unique accolade for Zach Galifianakis, that his stupid little Funny or Die interview web series wound up getting him an interview with Barack Obama. I think that's just really hilarious. It's hilarious in the sort of meta way that the show is already hilarious because of how ridiculous it is. And that's just ridiculous in its own way. So yeah, I'm going to have to go with that one.
Didn't they bring the show back? Like, wasn't it not a thing for like years? And then they brought it back just to interview Obama. I'm pretty sure there was nothing.
Yeah, like he took a hiatus or something, or he was working on just a lot of movies at the time. But yeah, I forgot if it was a request from the Obama team or just Zach sought him out. But it was somewhere. They definitely came back after like a year or two off.
I don't know if it was that much time. I think it was, there was a couple months between that and like its last episodes, but it definitely wasn't like a weekly thing or something like that. But I don't think it was more than a year, but it definitely was, there was some time in between.
Yeah. I have to say like one of my favorite episodes is the Brad Pitt one, because it just kind of like culminates into, you always see all these actors and celebrities get interviewed by Zach Galifianakis. He puts them in very uncomfortable and very cringy situations. And at the end of it, you always saw like the actor just kind of take it on the chin and leave and just be like, all right, that was weird. I'm glad that moment's over. But with Brad Pitt, his whole interview is all about the ending, where he actually is like one of the first celebrities you see actually retaliate against Zach. And so when he stands up and just spits a piece of gum right down Zach Galifianakis' throat, it's just one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So join us very soon for our spoiler-filled review, Between Two Ferns, the movie, right after this short break. We are the Down and From Podcast. We are going into our spoiler-filled review of Between Two Ferns, the movie starring Zach Galifianakis, Will Ferrell, Laura Lapkus, and a bunch of other celebrities. It's written and directed by Scott Aukerman. And first, we're going to talk about the acting and the story in this film. So, Mr. Blewett, how about you start us off?
Such a weird feeling. I'm never first with this. So as far as the acting and story goes, first of all, there wasn't much of a story. I think Mocha has a great analysis of this one, but it basically was like the most shenanigans plot to somewhat change the location of where they were so they could make jokes at the expense of the environment. But it was a reason to get him into new places to see new people and have these new interviews. I believe I wrote down as far as like the, so that's kind of like plot. There wasn't really anything as far as acting goes, man, like I love that the actors buy in that this is a bit. You know, one of the best things about the original story was that, like, you somewhat didn't know if they knew it was a joke or not. Like, that's how good it was. It was this, like, weird thing of, like, they're friends, right? Like, he's in The Hangover. They all know who he is. But it was just so awkward. And they asked, he asked so many, like, weirdly personal questions that, like, normally you could see, you know, someone's manager being like, absolutely, you cannot ask them. Even if they don't answer it, you just cannot ask them that because of their fan base. That being said, I want to give a warm shout out to Brie Larson, Brie Cheese Larson, apparently 30 years old today, October 1st. Just looked it up when I was looking up the class. So yeah, that's
fun. Happy birthday, Brie Larson.
Happy birthday.
Of course, we had to decline the invite to her birthday party because we had to do this podcast. We appreciate the shout out. We just couldn't make
it. Yeah, it's just bad timing with my sober October. I'm not going to go and be the only sober guy at a Brie Larson birthday party.
Scheduling conflicts. The other thing that I want to talk about.
There's a Cree that invited me to a birthday party. Same time, sorry.
Oh, well, if it's Samuel Jackson, then I love it. the also thing is that I want to talk about Paul Rudd, because I wish that Paul Rudd was mayonnaise so I could slather him all over me every third Christmas. That is just exactly what I wrote down, because that's how I feel about Paul Rudd. I think the best joke, the standout joke for this entire movie was where they were talking about him hiding his Jewishness. And so kind of at the end, Zach Galifianakis goes, oh, are you still practicing? And Paul Rudd just sits there, pauses for a second and goes, no, I've perfected it. And I nearly wet my pants because I hadn't peed in about 4 hours. But I also did think that that joke was tremendously funny as well. And that made it as an age.
Yeah, that was probably the moment where I laughed out the most. Was that was just a brilliant setup for Paul Rudd to do what Paul Rudd does best, which is this, like, just super charming but also very smarmy humor at the same time. And I find that, I mean, that's kind of like his strength, but also in a way like Zach Galifianakis' strength as well. He's definitely in his element when he's hosting these interview sessions for Between Two Ferns, and just putting people in uneasy situations seems to be like his best thing he does. Like, I'm not his biggest fan, but I do think the Between Two Ferns stuff is the best way that he expresses his humor off and on. And I know some people might think of it as a detriment that we kind of get to see how the sausage is made, so to speak, that we know that the actors are kind of into this thing, even though we'd love for the actors to be just caught off guard by these weird, cringy questions he brings. But, you know, it also kind of speaks to how good these actors are, that they can actually come off as very uncomfortable in these situations still, even though that they already know that there's a joke here and a setup that's going to lead to these questions, or they may understand like, oh, there's a premise here where he's going to throw me off guard. And then it's either you got a moment to react to it in a weird way or crack up at it.
Yeah.
At a weird
way. You know, I have somewhat mixed feelings as a result of that about the outtakes. I think that those were some of the funniest lines that, you know, that just didn't end up. Maybe they just couldn't get a good take on it. But it totally reminded me of that early 2000s era where, like, every movie ended with the outtakes. And I love those movies. Rush Hour was a massive thing for that. And, like,
every Jackie Chan movie ended with him hitting himself.
Chris Tucker trying to pronounce gefilte fish for like 9 hours. And like that.
Fish?
Yeah. Like that's that. I remember that more than I remember the movie, pretty much. But the other side of it was seeing the actors and Zach Galifianakis break. And it somewhat did pull a little bit of the magic out of it, where it was like, oh yeah, this is fake. The whole thing's fake. They all are in on the joke. It's not some like Borat types, you know, skit where like, no, you know, the person he's interviewing isn't necessarily in on the joke.
See, that's an interesting take, because for me, this, you guys are right, or at least I feel the same way as you, in that, especially in the early days of Between Two Ferns, you never really knew, and you weren't sure if it was like you said, like a Borat style or like an Andy Kaufman style approach where, you know, the other people weren't in on it. But I feel like as soon as you say Between Two Ferns, the movie, and introduce an actual narrative to it, which this movie had, instead of what I thought this movie was going to be, which would just be like a series of interviews, then it's already you know that it's fake. Like, that magic was gone at that point. And for me, actually, the credits and the outtakes during the credits actually brought me back, because it reminded me of exactly what you guys have just said before about like how good these actors are and how much fun they must be having experiencing Zach Galifianakis being just really shitty to them and saying all these super uncomfortable things, like asking Brie Larson when she got her first period. Like, it was refreshing to me to see that aspect of it. So I feel differently in that regard.
And I did find, like, I don't think any magic is lost because of the outtakes or anything. I actually, much like y'all, I appreciate the outtakes because of Burt Reynolds movies. So if you ever seen Cannonball Run or Smokey and the Bandit, like, that's where I started actually loving just outtakes during credits, just because I like to see, okay, it reminds me, these are people that are working to entertain you, and here's a little snippet of what they have to go through to actually get this entertainment out there for you, which I always, it makes me respect the craft more when I see that, versus like kind of just leaving your audience in the blind about, is this quote unquote real or not for the setup.
It also, it is kind of refreshing to see these people that are, a lot of them in like super serious roles, like have those break moments and are just like palling around. Like I said, the only real detriment to the outtakes, cause I thought they were hilarious. You know, and they showed like a more human side of a lot of these people that you really don't see in unscripted, even if they play comedic roles, they're still scripted comedic roles. So it's kind of cool seeing them just like kind of off the cuff, just like hanging out. I mean, Paul Rudd, we know that happens, right? Like, I'm pretty sure he just wandered on the set to Ant-Man. They slapped a costume on him and said, go get it, buddy. you know, whereas like someone like Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, I've never really seen them in a comedic role, or like not a highly scripted comedic role with comedic parts. It was kind of cool to see him just like kind of cut loose.
One thing that I really liked about the interview with Paul Rudd, aside from, you know, just any extended amount of time getting to look at his face and his smile, was the fact that Zach Galifianakis says to him, he's asking him about the Marvel movies, and then he says something along the lines of, like, do you miss being in movies that no one's ever heard of? And like, that kills me, because one of my favorite like comedy movies and Paul Rudd movies is called They Came Together. And very few people know that movie. I'm getting a blank stare from you, Blewett. Maybe even from you.
Never.
You guys should watch They Came Together. It's a romantic comedy about Paul Rudd and, oh gosh, what is her name? From Parks and Rec, the main character.
Amy Poehler.
Yeah. It's Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd in a romantic comedy that is just constantly making fun of romantic comedies. And it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, and no one knows about it. So yeah, that one definitely struck a chord with me.
Is that movie like Mac and Me?
Yeah, almost. It's actually a reboot.
Speaking of some other actors in here, like, the movie definitely shines when it's doing this interview moments, and then when we have this road trip framework around it, it definitely feels like a very generic road trip comedy when it's in those parts, but it even has some shining moments in those moments, like having Will Ferrell play just a overly rich and cocaine addicted version of Will Ferrell as the head of the Funny or Die website, and obsessed with how many clicks he gets, carrying his click counter around and everything. Will Ferrell just still shows like his comedic genius like knows no bounds, like whether it's him talking about like clicks get the green, which makes the white, that makes the purple, then he just says like the purple is purple bolas around your neck. Or when he's talking to Zach and asking him what does he want, what is his dreams in life, and instead of having to shake on his TV show deal, he has him kneel, and then he just pulls out his sword and knights him.
Out of nowhere.
Even Zach Galifianakis is like, this is not how this is done.
And it's just great to see that his character is wacky throughout the film, but also kind of like, I mean, just, it never gets cartoony. It's just more of like, what if Will Ferrell was like the absolute worst boss and just wanted to pull a prank on his employees every single time he met with them?
There's this really uncanny aspect to Will Ferrell where no matter how ridiculous the character he's playing is acting, it always feels like, yeah, this could just be what he's like. Like, it never feels like he's really going way out there. Like, this could just be Will Ferrell all the time. I would absolutely believe it. Part of his charm.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, so on the Will Ferrell thing, like, we sadly might not be at a place where Will Ferrell can carry a movie anymore. You know, like, it almost seems like that ship sailed in, like, the mid-2000s. Where lately he's had some pretty terrible movies where he's been the star of. And in fact, like the better ones from, you know, like maybe the last 10 years or so is when he just pops up. You know, his cameo in Wedding Crashers is probably one of the funniest things that's ever happened. Speaking of, again, peeing myself, like I nearly lost all kidney control during that scene. Like I produced urea because I was laughing that hard, like never mind the whole bladder situation. And it's the same thing where like he was clearly, you know, heavily involved in this, the making of this film, right? It's, you know, part of his production, like squad. But they didn't overuse him just for the sake of like having Will Ferrell be in this movie. He was pretty well spaced out at the beginning and the end. And they could keep his wackiness like contained where it never felt overblown, right? Like that's when you go over the top like that, you can get old really fast. And because they spaced him out, it never quite did.
Yeah. And, I think like that might be one of the detriments to this movie is, not a lack of Will Ferrell. I mean, I think the moments they used Will Ferrell were fantastic, but when it came to them setting up like just moments and having a lead in to the next interview during the road trip parts, all the humor just felt either for the most part kind of flat or that they weren't really sure how to just structure just even more humorous takes to lead up to what's supposed to be the main funny bit, which are the interviews. Like the movie starts with this brilliant Matthew McConaughey interview, which I think is amazing. Like when he asks him, like, I see you have your shirt on. Are you okay? I mean, that's like an instant, just start laughing at this movie type of moment. But like, as it goes on, I think it was definitely like the closest interview to being, to what the web series was, because it starts to feel like some of these interviews are just snippets of like the bigger interview that has like these cringy pauses in it and everything. But there's nothing funnier than seeing Matthew McConaughey get swept away by like an ocean of water that's inside a studio. Like the side characters, like played by Lauren Lapkus and some other actors, they just felt like they didn't get time to like kind of come up to Zach's level as well. It's just almost like they were there to just watch him as he walks around or drives around the country and does his wacky hijinks. And then they're just, you have like four or five audience surrogates in the movie watching him, just staring at him doing these crazy things.
I just want to kind of focus on what you mentioned earlier, Brylan, about how the interviews themselves feel like they were part of something larger. That was one thing that I think was a miss for this movie. A pretty big miss, actually, because the thing that draws you to Between Two Ferns is the interviews between the fern, you know, that he has between those two ferns. That's all we've ever gotten before, and that's what's funny about it. And Lou was alluding to this earlier, but my feeling watching this movie was that you had the web series Between Two Ferns, and then in between each interview was like a watered down episode of The Office. It had like that same kind of vibe where it was like, oh, all these coworkers with kooky personalities who are working together, and there's a film crew watching them, and you know, like a lot of looks towards the camera when something silly happens that, you know, bothers somebody. And it just didn't really land for me. It didn't feel like it was like that narrative that was suddenly interjected into the world of Between Two Ferns was worth the shortening of the interviews themselves. The interviews, there were at least 10 because he had to like complete this objective, but like they were all super short. They were all just really like two or three back and forth statements. And that kind of sucks because everyone who was interviewed was a great person to watch interview. I could have watched several more minutes of him interviewing Peter Dinklage. I could have watched several more minutes of him interviewing Tiffany Haddish. I could have watched several more hours of him interviewing Paul Rudd. And we don't get any of those interviews to time to breathe or kind of blossom out into what they could have been comically. And we got some of the best stuff from those interviews in the end credits when we were watching them break. One of my favorite jokes, speaking of Matthew McConaughey, is in the credits how Zach Galifianakis looks at him and he says, when you and Woody Harrelson are doing a scene together, are you ever sad that there aren't hackies being sacked? And I was like, this is great. Why wasn't this in the movie?
Well, in those road trip parts, I mean, they definitely feel like they're just not pushing the humor as edgy as like you would expect in a Zach Galifianakis movie. Like if you look at The Hangover and just what that did for just kind of like the buddy comedy genre of films, how it did definitely like just had no chill and just wanted to push those edges as far as possible. And like Zach's Between Two Ferns is all about like putting people in uncomfortable situations. You really don't get that in the road trip moments, but I do have to say, like, aside from Will Ferrell, the whole Peter Dinklage setup I think is amazing. One, I love a good Song of Ice and Fire joke. When you put it
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah.
It.
The Winds See? Of Winter. That was amazing. Yeah.
I love that it was this old, weathered, leather-bound tome. Like, it wasn't just a manuscript. It was like this ancient thing.
Yeah. And just Peter Dinklage just walk around like, I'm a rich, self-important asshole to all
of. Oh, my God. His Andy Warhol portrait painting that was just LaCroix. And like, he was like, they were like, was this around back then? He was like, yeah.
Well, the brutal part about
Fabergé eggs having an egg carton to them was fantastic.
The brutal part about Dinklage was that it was never meant to be an actual interview, right? It was a plot device. It was like, let's get them, have them get some money. I think it comes down, speaking of money, it comes down to money, where like you could do these outlandish, crazy things in the interviews because it literally was them sitting on a set together in two folding chairs or stools or whatever they were on. Whereas if you were to do any weird hijinky stuff with traveling across America, it'd probably involve them actually spending money on like sets and stunts and I don't know, whatever CGI maybe. Like, whereas if you just kept it to just whatever jokes, not excusing it, but the other thing is that, I don't know. This movie was under an hour and a half. And do you think maybe that extra 8 minutes to get it to an hour and a half, would that slow the movie down too much, or would those 8 minutes worth of, you know, one more minute per interview per person, essentially, like,
it's hard to say because I think the preferable version of this movie not only would have, you know, another minute or so for each interview, but would also have almost none of the story. Like I didn't need any of the story. I wanted like this could have been just like a Netflix series, like a short like 8 episode thing.
10 interviews that are about 5 minutes each.
Yep. Do that. And I'm gonna watch that and probably rewatch it over and over and over. I am not gonna go back and watch this movie again. And as we know, like Netflix kind of needs people to rewatch their stuff if it's a one-off, because that's how they make their money.
Yeah, you're not wrong, where like the interviews were so short and then also kind of hard to find, right? So it's not even like you can fast forward to them. I kind of wish that they released the full interviews in another format, you know, like make it the movie and then maybe have, like you said, like a you know, the season approach and just have like the 10 interviews uncut and, you know, for everyone to see. Because they had to have left a ton of stuff on the cutting room floor, right? Like an astronomical amount of content they must have cut from that those movies to make the interviews like 2 minutes long.
Yeah, especially if going by the outtakes, if it's them just constantly riffing until things get right, then yeah, there should be hours of stuff.
Right. Yeah, because most of the jokes from the outtakes weren't like jokes they used in the film itself. Like most of them were brand new, and so. Yeah, there's got to be a ton of stuff that they left off, and I would love to see that stuff. Unless they straight up couldn't hold it together. You know, that might be another thing where, like, they could just never get an actual take, in which case, fire your editor, because there's always a way to get a take out of something. But, like, you know, if they literally just couldn't clean it up for even a punch-in or something, I don't know what they call it in the movie world, but, like, that's what, yeah, audio.
Yeah, I would say just like one other person I found that I just kind of missed his late night talk show after watching this is David Letterman. His interview with Letterman, it just reminds me of how great Letterman is as this very dry humorist and deadpan person. And just his rapport is just perfect to be like the best foil to what Zach Galifianakis is doing in this show. And I think it's kind of ironic that they lead up to a point where Zach Galifianakis gets his talk show, which is called Ferns, because there's more than two now. And he kind of just like makes safe softball questions to get the celebrities to talk about himself, much like every single talk show that has come before it. And removing all, and it comes to this point where, like, I guess the whole lesson of the Zach Galifianakis character needs to learn is that what you have in the public access realm is special. And even though it's not the biggest thing on TV, appreciate it for what it is versus giving up on that innovation that you bring and then just being another cog in the wheel, so to speak. Do y'all have anything else y'all like to add about the acting and story?
No.
All right. So we're going to move on. We're just going to do a really quick hot take on this movie. And the hot take for Between Two Ferns is, what other funny or die properties would you want to see as movies? So, as far as I know, this is the first Funny or Die property that's become a feature-length film. I mean, we've definitely seen some other properties become their own TV shows, but this is their first film property. So I was just curious, like, are y'all familiar enough with the Funny or Die content to be excited about anything else getting a shot of being a film or not?
I want to see The Landlord.
Is The Landlord the one with the little girl?
Yeah, so Adam McKay's kid.
Oh, is that like, whose kid it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that one's really good.
I'll have your money next week. Oh, no. But that was like the one that started it all. She's probably like 27 at this point. Like, so I don't think that joke really works. But but yeah, I think Pearl was her name.
Pearl,
she's,
yeah.
Yeah, she's terrifying. Terrifying.
That's also, though, another example of, if we were thinking about like things that can be made into a movie, or I guess maybe a show even, that's another thing that would have to be led by Will Ferrell. And not just as a cameo. He's like the whole thing in that. Unless they got somebody else to play him. I guess they can get someone else to play Pearl. They might as well get someone else to play him.
Yeah. Mocha, do you have anything you'd be interested in?
It's hard to say. I've definitely enjoyed Funny or Die sketches, but I don't have an active catalog of them in my mind. The ones that come to my mind immediately have already been made into like shows like Billy on the Street and Drunk History. So no, I don't have a good answer for this.
Okay. I would say, like, the one that definitely stands out for me that it's probably my favorite Funny or Die sketch is the Don Cheadle's Captain Planet. I would love to see, like, just a full feature-length movie of his Captain Planet just going apeshit on people that cross him. I still am looking for a t-shirt that says "The power is mine" and has him on it. Just because I think if you're going to modernize, like, any type of a kid show and, like, make it for adults that grew up with that show as a kid, this farce that they've created with Captain Planet and Don Cheadle, I think is, like, just perfect. And you could still bring that eco-friendly message along with it, even though it's, like, it becomes a bit overly aggressive with his ecological conservationism.
Yeah, I was going to say, that short is funny until it's not, and then it's, like, legitimately scary.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit, Captain Planet's turning everybody into trees.
I did it.
Alrighty, so we're going to roll into our conclusions and give our final thoughts on this movie. Mr. Mocha, how about you start us off?
Yeah. So as far as this movie goes, I mean, the best part of this movie, in my opinion, are the bloopers after the credits. The interviews were also good too, but like I mentioned earlier, there's a whole lot of stuff between the interviews that I feel like was fluff and wasn't necessary and kind of brought the rest of it down. It wasn't bad. It's just not really the place for it, I felt. Maybe just watch the end credits and then for like 10 minutes and then spend, I don't know, 60 minutes watching three episodes of The Office instead. I think you'll get a better experience out of that.
Blewett?
Yeah, it's a definition of a Netflix movie where they had, about 20 minutes of good ideas and then fleshed it out to a little under an hour and a half. And then also probably paid up the wazoo for like celebrity cameos to just prop it up. You know, the amount of people that were just in the background for 3 seconds, like when the sound mixer was talking about all the celebrities she's turned down. You know, it's just like, yeah, that probably cost a pretty penny just to have them show up for one afternoon of shooting. Yeah, it's Netflix. I'd check it out. Put it on. It's a background movie. It's funny when you tune in, and it's not. And who cares if you tune out?
True, absolutely. And I would just add to that. I mean, I think it's definitely worth watching if you're a fan of the Between Two Ferns sketch comedies from Funny or Die. I don't know if it they did enough to make it where it's palatable to a broader audience, though. So I think it'll stay safely within its realm of humor and the people that appreciate that humor, because it is kind of a mockumentary unto itself, that what they did for Between Two Ferns with this film. But I would say if you definitely found it entertaining, I would say if you want to see a better version of a mockumentary, check out This is Spinal Tap, because that's pretty much the king of mockumentaries out there. And with that, we have been the Down in Front podcast. We want to share where you can find us everywhere on the planet, whenever you're listening to podcasts. But first, let's hear from Mocha. Mocha, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, sitting between two ficuses, at MochaMikeLI, as the Lord intended. Unfortunately, you cannot find me at Mocha Mike. The person who owns that name was run off the road in the desert by a mysterious person driving in the other lane and wasn't able to get me his password before he careened into a ditch and died. So unfortunately, it'll be at Mocha Mike LI. But you can also find me on Instagram at Mocha Mike, as well as on Medium. Instagram being the place where I post photos and Medium being the place where I do some long form writing. Form reviews of the movies that we talk about here.
Mr. Blewett?
Hey, how's it going, guys? You can check us out at My Niece Music or My Niece Band. One of those two will work on most major platforms. Check us out. We've got some tunes for you to enjoy, as well as, well, that's what we do. It's a music act, so it's going to be tunes. Also, you could check out Jesse Rand at the website dyingtobefunny.com, where he is doing interviews with ferns, where he just interviews plants I hear it's invigorating. I've never really watched it. I have like a weird phobia with Jesse, but you know, check it out, guys. Dying to be funny, Jesse Rand.
And I am the mouth of the South, Bryland, and you can always find me having very important things to do, like driving my Lincoln convertible shirtless on Twitter at Bryland, B-R-I-L-U-N-D. You can also find me posting many movie and TV reviews on Instagram at I am Bryland. I recently put one up for the new anime series, Carol and Tuesday. Definitely check it out. I think it's worth watching. We are the Down and Front Podcast, and you can find us anywhere social media exists, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. On Twitter, we're at _DIFP. On Facebook, we're at the Down and From Podcast. But find our podcast and our reviews wherever you can find podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on SoundCloud. We're probably on Mixer or some other thing out there. Stay tuned. We have some other reviews coming up. Our next review is going to be, speaking of The Hangover, will be Todd Phillips' new film, Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix. And with that, y'all have a great night.
Bye, everybody. What are your plans? Don't make the same mistakes I did.